Log Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin sale, bro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, ha. We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general. King Khalid Muhammad, we gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin sale, bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, and that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prisons. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Extinction, decomposition, coming up from the animal's life was just a matter of fact. It was just a part of the daily routine. For 2,000 years, the white man and white woman lived in the caves and hills of Europe, roped, bound, confined in Europe, living worse than in the Dark Ages. He did his number one in the cave.
All right.
Yeah. You know what number one is. He did his number two in the cave, too. So for 2,000 years in that same cave, he did his number one. For 2,000 years in that same cave, he did his number two. Can you imagine walking around in your number one and your number two, generation after generation? Can you imagine not just walking around in your number two, but can you imagine lying down to go to sleep every night, right there in your urination and your defecation? That's what they did for 2,000 years in the caves and hills of Europe. for 2,000 years. That's what they did. And today they still like their meat raw. Don't they? Some of you go to the restaurants, you try to act like white folks, don't know what the hell you doing. You haven't even been to that kind of fancy restaurant before. You trying to show off. You know how you can fix them big, beautiful, thick African lips all to the side and get proper when you like to get proper. You trying to listen to the white folks at the next table so you can decide what you go on. And they say, I'll have a prime rib end cut. You say, yeah, that sounds like that's pretty good. So you think you cool, you straight now. But then the waiter asked the next question. How would you like that, sir? How would you like that, ma'am? And you heard the white folks say, I'll have mine red. You say, well, hell, that must mean it's a real special kind of snake, a steak. If it's rare, must not be no more steaks like that one in the whole restaurant. So I got to show off for my lady, so I'm going to get a rare end cut prime rib that ain't got no more cuts like that, because it's rare. It must be a special steak. And so you sitting there proper, waiting, holding your cancer stick in your hand, puffing on a poison nicotine weed that the goddamn white man gave you, found on one end and a fool on the other end of the cigarette. You sitting there waiting, and they bring it with the blood all in the plate, and then you lose your coolness. You ain't proper no more. You lose all of that. I don't want this here. What you bring me this here for with all this blood? I don't want this. With all this, I thought it was rap. He said, well, sir, or ma'am, it is rare. They still eat their meat raw today. They like to eat it with the blood running out. They like to taste the blood. They got blood pies. They got blood pudding. They got a pudding called boudin. Blood. And they sit down and eat it like it's Hunt's or Heinz tomato sauce. Big tablespoon of blood. Say, isn't it great, honey? She said, yes, it's wonderful. Pass me the escargot. That's another thing they hang you up on. They say, our special today is escargot ugohukishi. You don't know what the hell it is. And they bring it to you and you find out it's nails and them African lips get straight then. You're not proper anymore then. You're not holding that little, you know how you can hold that little finger up when you're trying to get proper? I don't want no damn snails. I don't eat no snails. Crawling white folks love snails. They even have another delicacy that they call mountain oysters. That's the male organ of the bull. Sex organ of the bull. They eat the male bull genitalia on a plate with a fork and a knife and some salt and pepper. And call it a delicacy. And you sitting right there eating with them. You want a rattlesnake steak. These people did this for 2,000 years in the caves and hillsides of Europe. They crawled around on their all fours. That's why our dear brothers in this house, who we love and respect, they should be here at this meeting today. We love them. The Grand Master of this lodge should be sitting right up here. We have a special seat for the Grand Master, the Imperial Grand Potentate. We got a seat for all of them, the daughters of Jericho and the heroines of Jericho and the Eastern Star. We got a special place for them because they are following after the white man's order and not after their own. They have 32 degrees, is that right? 32 degrees. But they say that they are upright on the square. Been raised from a dead level to a living perpendicular upright on the square. In order to be upright on the square, you must have a 90-degree angle. Is that right? It must be a 90-degree angle to be upright on the square. Half of that is what? Is a 45-degree angle. Is that right? 45 degree angle. But now here's the people who say they're upright on the square. And they got 32 degrees somewhere down here. And 32 degrees is freezing on the Fahrenheit scale. Then they get an honorary degree, the 33rd degree, and they go into the Shriners. And they name their lodges Mecca Lodge, Medina Lodge, Muhammad Lodge, Elijah Lodge, Quran Lodge. These are white folks, white presidents, are members of the Quran Lodge, the Muhammad Lodge, the Mecca Lodge, the Medina Lodge. Did you know that? White judges, whites who are in corporate America, even white straw-chewing, tobacco-chewing, snuff-dipping, overall-wearing peckers down in the deep south that will call us a nigger in a minute. They believe in masonry, and they are members of Quran Lodge and Muhammad Lodge and Mecca Lodge and all of these lodges. And they wear a fez with a black tassel on it. A red fez with a black tassel on it. With a star and crescent like this one turned upside down. Not right side up, but upside down. With a sword running through. You see them wearing it in diamonds in their lapel with a sword running through. The sword is there to remind the white man. You have robbed the black man and the black woman of their name, their language, their religion, their culture, their God, their folkways, their mores, their norms, and robbed them of the very power of their own being. And if you ever let the black man know who he really is, if you ever let the secret leak out of who the black woman really is, if they ever know who they really are, you will never be able to control them again. So that will be the hour of the resurrection of the dead, the rise of the black nation, and the fall and the demise of the white man. So they can't let you know who you are. Crazy people. They can't let you know who you are. That you are actually a god, black man, and you are actually a goddess, black woman, and we are all children of the Most High God. You can read it in the 82nd chapter of the book of Psalms. Ye are gods, all of you children of the Most High God. It says, arise, O God. That's the 82nd chapter of Psalms. Then they contend with Jesus. You know Jesus, right? Jesus, that's the black revolutionary Messiah. Who is he? Now some of you can't say that because you're so used to a blonde hair, blue eyed, pale skin, buttermilk complexion, peckerwood up in the stained glass windows of your church. Here you are, blacker than the ace of spades. Some of you so black and beautiful until you blue black, purple black and beautiful. Some of you so black until you blacker than 150 million midnight. Hair so nappy and beautiful until it looks like a million black power fists standing up on top of your head. But you go to a church with a white Jesus, a white Mary, am I lying? Tell the truth and shame the devil. White angel with a white robe on and some white chicken wings. Some of you even believe God is white and you can't see him, you see. You believe the angels are white. When you close your eyes to pray, you see a white man. Oh, Lord, help me get out of this jail. They done gave me 40 years. And you see a white man in your mind that looks just like the white man that gave you the damn 40 years. How you gonna get out? How in the hell are you gonna get out? Oh, Lord, the rent is due. Got a red notice on the phone, a red notice on the gas, a red notice on the light. The refrigerator is empty. Oh, Lord, please help me. And you see a white man in your mind power department who's going to turn the lights off. White man in your mind that look just like the white man down there who's going to turn the gas off. Look just like the white man who's going to authorize the marshals to come and set your stuff out on the street. He looks just like the white man that's going to serve you notice to get out of his house. The scriptures say he or she who calls on the name of the Lord God shall be saved. So the question is, have we been calling on the right name of God? Have we been calling on the right God?
The fraternity of policemen. He said that the policeman is God. That's what he said. It is the devil saying that the policeman is God. He's judge, jury, and executor. Huh? Right on the spot. He talked about how he used to beat black men and women and Chicano brothers and sisters until he would just beat the waste out of them, beat the mess out of them. He said, then you could smell the niggas and the Mexicans or the Chicano. You could smell them. I mean, you could smell them stinking. He said you couldn't get into the jail for the stench coming from them. They just beat them until they urinate on themselves, beat them until their bowels would waste all over. He said he'd grab them and just throw them down the steps, just throw them down. And another cracker down at the other end of the steps or catch them at the other end of the steps, kick them and beat them. No, you got to, I'm here to tell you that the only way you're going to stop police brutality is you got to stand up and be brutal with this damn beast. You got to step to this cracker or it will never stop. You can moan, you can groan, you can sing, you can pray. You can recite, you can claim you know all the Quran, Old Testament. All the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran from Al-Fatiha to Al-Nas. You can know all the Medunetah. You can know Maya, truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity. You can name those of the Netter system. You can go and study the Odu text and substantiate your position according to Odu. You can study the Ifa or the Word or the Akan or the Yoruba and run through the pantheon of the Orisha. You can call on Oludumare. You can call on Ilegba and Shango and Obatula and Oshun and Ogun and Yemonya. You can know all of that. But unless you're willing to stand up and step to this white man, we will never get out of this condition. Frederick Douglass said the limits of a tyrant is prescribed by exactly how far you will let that tyrant go. He won't stop if you don't stop him. It's like any bully. The bully will keep picking on you until you get him to raise up off of you. Some of us will lose our lives. Tupac is gone already. Biggie is gone already. Many of us, Yusuf Hawkins is gone already. Many of us are already dead and we're dying every day. And while we're here in Queens tonight, black men and women and young black boys are dying at the hands of some cracker somewhere in America right now. I would rather die for a cause than to die because you in some barroom pinching somebody's wife on the booty on the bar stool and get your throat cut with a Miller Lite bottle. It's a hell of a life, man. That's a hell of a way to go. Say, your daddy got killed. Say, yeah. How'd he get killed? Say, he pinched somebody's wife on the booty at the bar stool. The dude picked up a Miller Lite bottle of Budweiser Light and broke it and cut his throat. Is that the way he died? Well, he died in the East Coast, West Coast fight. East Coast? West Coast? You a damn fool. You'll die over some bullshit? Some damn records? a damn CD? You are what you call a recording studio gangster? Oh, you bad as hell in the recording studio. Ain't a nigga in the world better than you. Capone couldn't mess with you. Babyface Nelson. None of them couldn't mess with you. A recording studio gangster. You just as bad as you can be. You gon' blow, put your gat in the nigga's mouth and blow the nigga's brains out. I'll stomp that hoe. I'll kick that bitch. White man, show up. You can hear a rat pee on cut. Nigga ain't ready to fight. Nigga ain't ready to fight. I say we must arm the masses. Most of y'all got guns anyway. You shoot them for the 4th of July. Damn day that ain't even your Independence Day. Yes, you do. You shoot them on New Year's and New Year ain't in yet. You just got them. They're just toys. Or you'll go get them on your wife. Draw the gun on her because she burnt the beans for the 4th time. She'll just go order some beans. Or she'll draw the pistol on you because the phone rang at 2 in the morning and you stayed on too long talking too low. Two or three brothers so bad. I'm Crip. Two or three brothers so bad, I'm blood. They'll go off into territory of their rival brother gang and face bumper jacks, face chains, baseball bats, pipes, nines, AKs, face everything in a fratricidal war with your kith and kin, your flesh and blood, your brother, your sister. The goddamn white man come, you throw the guns under the damn car, throw the damn guns in the bushes, he make 50 niggas spread up against the wall, one peck of wood. All right, get up against the wall, buddy. Don't move, guy. Here's Will Kill Johnson. Here's Bloody Blood. All them crazy names you got. Here's Shotgun. All of them spread up against the wall.
To our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policies.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
Mother so-and-so and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
You can't fool all the people all of the time, but if you fool the right one, then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars, because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really needs us. There's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the goose is still good for the gander, see.
I don't believe Bob Marley got me cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed Huey because they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't want no computer chip in my arm.
I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I say we all rush the Pentagon, pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God out of ignorance and fear. If God made man, then why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all-loving, the same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half-ass leadership, flipping position. They turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. Boy, your TV screen is telling lies to your vision. Every channel got the brainwashed cop shit to watch. Running up in niggas' cribs, claiming that they earned shots. Just a plot. But Buster, can you tell me who's greedier? The big corporations, the pigs or the media? Sign of the times, terrorism on the rise. Commercial airplanes falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown, who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found. It's not coincidence. There's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics, but it probably was the FBI. Deep at the core, cause if they make us all panic, they can start martial law. I don't believe all Marley Johnson can't stop. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed Huey cause they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, propaganda. I don't believe all Marley Johnson can't stop. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. You killed Huey cause you knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, motherfucking propaganda. KKK, IRS, TNT, CBS, NBC, FBI, CIA, ATF, KKK, IRS, TNT, CBS, NBC.
Love and a great understanding, and that we try to extend this to the general black population and also people, oppressed people all over the world. And I think that we differ from some other groups simply because we understand the system better than most groups understand the system. And with this realization, we attempt to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
Set up by their ancestors to serve the people no longer serves the people, for the people have changed. The people of the 18th century have become the ruling circle of the 20th century, and the people of the 20th century are the descendants of the slaves and the dispossessed of the 18th century. The Constitution set up to serve the people of the 18th century now serves the ruling circle of the 20th century. And the people of today stand wanting for a foundation for their own life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The Civil Rights Movement has not produced this foundation, and it cannot produce this foundation because of the nature of the United States society and economy. The version of the Civil Rights Movement, the vision of the Civil Rights Movement is to achieve goals which have been altered by 200 years of change. Thus, the Civil Rights Movement and similar movements have produced no foundation for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They have produced humiliating programs of welfare and unemployment compensation, programs with sufficient form to deceive the people, but with insufficient substance to change the fundamental distribution of power and resources in this country. Moreover, while the movements attempt to get minorities in the system, we note that the government continues this pattern of practice which contradicts its democratic rhetoric. We recognize now that we see history repeating itself, but on an international as well as a national scale. The relentless drive to profit led this nation to colonize, oppress, and exploit its minorities. This profit drive took this nation from democratic capitalism and underdevelopment to bureaucratic capitalism and overdevelopment. Now we see that the small ruler circle continues this profit drive by oppressing and exploiting the people of the world. Throughout the world, the proletariat is crushed so that the profits of the American industry can continue to flow. Throughout the world, the freedom struggle of oppressed people are opposed by this government because they are a threat to the bureaucratic capitalism of the United States of America. We gather here to let it be known at home and abroad that a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness has in its maturity become an imperialistic power dedicated to death, oppression, and the pursuit of profit. We will not be deceived by so many of our fellow men. We will not be blinded by small changes in form which lack any change in substance of the imperialist expansion. Our suffering has been too long. Our sacrifices have been too great. And our human dignity is too strong for us to be prudent any longer. The Black Panther Party calls for freedom and power to determine our destiny. The Black Panther Party calls for full employment for all our people. The Black Panther Party calls for an end to the capitalistic exploitation of our community. The Black Panther Party calls for decent housing for all people. The Black Panther Party calls for an educational system that will tell us the true facts about this decadent society. The Black Panther Party calls for exemption from the military service. The Black Panther Party calls for an end to police brutality. The Black Panther Party calls for freedom for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. The Black Panther Party calls for trials by members of our peer when we're brought to the court and justice. The Black Panther Party calls for a United Nations plebiscite to determine the will of black people as to their national destiny. Black people and oppressed people in general have lost faith in leaders of America, in the government of America, and the very structure of the American government, that is the Constitution, its legal foundation. This loss of faith is based upon the overwhelming evidence that this government will not live according to the Constitution because the Constitution is not designed for its people. For this reason, we assemble a constitutional convention to consider rational and positive alternatives. Alternatives which will place the emphasis on the common man. Alternatives which will bring about a new economic system in which the rewards as well as the work will be equally shared by all people. A socialist framework. Alternatives which will guarantee that within the socialist framework, all groups will be adequately represented in decision-making and administration which affect their lives. Alternatives which would guarantee that all men will obtain their full manhood rights, that they will be able to live, be free, and seek out those goals which will give them respect and dignity while permitting the same privileges for every other man regardless of his condition or status. The sacredness of man and of the human spirit requires that human dignity and integrity ought to always be respected by every other man. We will sell for nothing less, or at this point in history, anything less is but a living debt. It is a fact that we will get change. We will transform the society. It is up to the oppressor to decide whether this will be a peaceful thing or... We will use whatever means that is effective, regardless of the consequence, because it is our conclusion and our principle that a slave who dies a natural death will not balance two dead flies on the scales of eternity. We will have our manhood, even if we have to level the face of the earth. And I step together. So I would like to say that we are one tonight. Let us be one in the future. Power to all of the people.
Holler to him, man. Yeah. Here we go, turn it up, let's start. From block to block, the Sassy Heart, the Jackie Martin, and the punk police can't fake me a minute. We can have beats some safety, but right now I got my mind set up. Looking down the bottle, I'm but not scared up. Cause it's time to make the payback back to my brothers on the block. Better stay strapped, black, and expect no substitutes. I bring two to the youth, tear the roof over old school. Oh no, I'm on the turn the other cheek. In case you can't see it, while we burn the other week. Black.
those of you rolling around in the church and carrying on in the same position as well. But let me continue. This society is a society of criminals, run by criminals, and it is a creator of criminals. And we must recognize it. And I have to say that because we got some people out here who say, I want my children to be just like them. That's the ultimate goal. I don't want there to be any differences. What are you talking about? You want them to be enslavers, rapists and robbers and killers and murderers and imperialists and so forth, just like the other folk, right? Think again, ladies and gentlemen. But due to our time, I'm just going to have to rush through here. I accuse the society of being a crimogenic society, a criminal society, a society that engages in white on black violence for a number of reasons. And of course, as you can tell, often the psychology of an individual or people in terms of their origins and early childhood experiences, you can look at then the psychology of a people in terms of their origins and early childhood of their race. And when we look then at the origins of this society, we must immediately recognize that it is a society founded on criminal activities. Yes, and that is its inheritance today. It is still a part of it. A society that is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages on white, on black violence, because it is founded on the murder and theft of Indian peoples and Indian lands. It is a crimogenic society, a criminal society, and a society that practices white on black violence, because it is a society founded on the kidnapping of African people, the manslaughter of African people in the mid-passage, the extortion from African people of their labor, and the enslavement of African people. Therefore, the very nature and foundations of this society rest on two massive genocidal crimes, and this original crime is a part of its nature today. It is a crimogenic society because this group of people cannot face their own criminality. They must engage in the psychology of denial and repression and distortion. And this denial and distortion and repression must suffuse throughout the total society, throughout its total institutions, throughout its total values, and therefore ultimately it must pervert its total population. It is a criminal society and a white on black violent society because it engages in the crime of breach of contract. It has breached the contract of its constitution. It breached the contracts it made with African people during the reconstructions. It breached its contracts of the 14th, 15th, and other amendments. It breached its contracts in reversing its rulings in the 1860s, 1870s, 1980s, and 1990s. It breached its contracts in terms of sharecropping, the peonage of our people, going back on the 40 acres and a mule, and all the rest of the things. It is a criminal society because it constantly engages in assault and battery against its black populations. It engaged in historical lynching, and behind the walls, as my brother mentioned here, of prisons, it still now engages in legal lynchings of African people. It engages in Klan terrorism, which it's still engaged in today. It engages in race riots, where it destroys the African people. It engages in police riots, and it engages in police brutality, where over 300 or more of our young men and women have been destroyed in the city of New York alone. It is a criminal society, and it is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages in black in white on black violence, because it is indicted on the charges of official malfeasance when it revokes its mandate in terms of giving justice to its people and makes this justice system an instrument of injustice, when its so-called rehabilitative system is a school for criminality. It engages in official malfeasance when it rigs its jewelry, when it legally lynches the ones it so woefully sentences. It engages in official malfeasance when it engages in gerrymandering of black districts, when it betrays the mandates of black voters, when it builds, as my brother mentioned here, prisons as industries, so that the incarceration of black men becomes a profit-making industry and a means by which the ruling class makes war against the subordinate classes. It engages in criminal activity, and it is a criminal society when it engages in unfair labor practices, job discrimination, when at the end of the Reconstruction there were more black skilled workers than there were whites, and the whites unionized to keep the blacks from taking advantage of the opportunities that were available to them. It is indicted for labor racketeering when it runs black men away from its construction sites, when we go into a black community where housing is supposedly being made and built for black residents, and we see few, if any, black men building those houses. And when those black men come to work on those sites, they are chased away by the police and the construction workers. And when they are chased away and made to stand on the corners, then they are accused of refusing to work and desiring not to work. We accuse this society of being a crimogenic society, of being a criminal organization, of being an organization that engages in chronic white-on-black violence, when it engages in drug trafficking, when it imports the drugs that poisons our neighborhoods and destroys the consciousness of our people, destroys their health. We see a crimogenic people from way back engaging in the selling of opium to the Chinese and in engaging in opium wars. We see this drug trafficking group of people engaging in alcohol addiction when they used it to destroy Indians, when they used it to destroy African chiefs who, under the influence of the alcohol, often signed away their peoples and their nations. We accuse it of drug addiction and drug trafficking when it traded guns for drugs to carry on its warfare in Central and South America. We accuse it of being a criminal nation, a criminal people, a criminal nation, a crimogenic society, when it engages in gun running across the world, when it sells the very weapons that will be used to destroy its own sons and daughters. We accuse it of criminality when it acts to maintain an evil military-industrial complex. We accuse it of being a criminal society when it sells its death wares across the world. How many of us recognize that we are dealing here with merchants of death? That these people are dead and deadly. People who are robbing black people at home so that they can rob black people abroad. We accuse this nation of being a crimogenic society and the ruling white population of being a criminal people because they engage in economic extortion, taxation of black people without representation, the redlining of black communities as they steal the savings and investment of black people, as they disinvest in the black community, as they do not return loans to the black community and use the monies that the black communities and the black church place in their coffers to export jobs out of the community into suburbs beyond the black, to the reach of the black population. When they export jobs outside of the country totally and starve our black men and women in Detroit and the other urban centers of this world, we accuse them of economic extortion when they deindustrialize this nation and ship out the blue-collar jobs that maintain the families of black people across this country and ship them to other places and exploit the other populations of this world. We accuse them of imperial criminality and of organized crime. This nation is an organized mafia operation. I have indicated to you that it is best when you look at the international situation that you will come away with a better understanding if you apply the concepts of mafia psychology to the international relations that are going on right now and that have been going on. We don't have time to talk about a chapter I do in here that I call Quantifying the Myth. You know, the myth of making black people appear to be more criminal than white people. A myth that is statistically supported by the number of black men and women arrested, by the number of black men and women incarcerated, by the number of black men and women under probation and parole. And of course, now we are supposed to look at those statistics and compare them between black and white. And because we see more blacks arrested, more blacks in jail, more blacks in probation and parole, we are supposed to make the illogical assumption that blacks are more criminal than whites.
I got loyalty, inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness, I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound, the engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks, they call the tire skirt, the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitched, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish, I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Paula's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was dead. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA, born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate. And I'm gon' shine like I'm supposed to. Antisocial, extrovert, and excellent mean an extrovert. And absentness, what the fuck you heard? And passiveness never struck my nerve. And that's a riff, gonna bleed this face. The reason my power's here on earth. Salute the truth and the prophecy. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA.
This is why I say that hip-hop has done more damage to young African-Americans than racism in recent years.
I never got my DNA. This is my heritage, all I'm inheriting. Money and power, the maker, emeritus.
tell me something. You motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I'd rather die than to listen to you. My DNA not for imitation, but DNA an abomination. This how I dish when you in the matrix, out your bullets, reaping what you're sowing, stacking up the footage, living on the go and sleeping in the pillar, sipping from a Grammy, parking in the building, diamond in the ceiling, marble on the floor, peaches out the window, peeking out the window, baby in the pool, God by the clothes, only Lord knows, I've been going hammer, dodging paparazzi, freaking through the cameras, eat it for a daughter's rock, wearing sandals, yoga on a Monday, stretches in the banner, watching all the snakes, curving all the fakes, phone never on, I don't camera stakes, I don't compromise, I just penetrate, sex, money, murder, these are the breaks, these are the times, level number 9, look up in the sky, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, motherfucker, I got winners on the way, you ain't shit without a buddy on your belt, you ain't shit without a ticket on your plate, you ain't sick enough to put it on yourself, you ain't rich enough to hit the ladder skate, tell me when destruction gonna be my fate, gonna be a fake, gonna be a fake, peace to the world, let it rotate, sex, money, murder, DNA.
But we want to welcome you to our rally, our unity rally, for a united black front. To unite all factions of our people. To unite every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes into one group. And you'll notice, whenever the white man thinks that we're going to call a rally to knock our own kind, you see him jammed out here. He wants to hear us say something against King or against Bunch or against Farmer, against someone of our own kind. He jams out here. But when you call a rally for black people to unite, let's get together, you don't see too many white folks then. They don't like black people to get together in unity and harmony. As long as you and I are going to attack each other or talk about each other, or he scorn and ridicule upon each other, the white man gets his kick. But when he knows that we're going to come together in unity and harmony, he won't get his kick, he will get kicked. When you see you and I getting together, it is because we have begun to realize that we have a common enemy. And the only time we'll be able to come together with a common objective and a common goal is when we first develop a common motive. And that motive is best developed by recognizing the common enemy. And that common enemy is the white man. I say that common enemy is the white man. The white man is your enemy, whether you are a Baptist, whether you are a Methodist, whether you are an Episcopalian, or whether you're a Muslim, or whether you're a Mason, or whether you're an elf, if you find yourself running into opposition when you're looking for freedom, justice, and equality, or some kind of right, you have to agree, always the one who opposes your right is the white man. Some old blue-eyed, blonde-haired, bad-smelling white man. When he puts his club upside your head, he doesn't care whether you're a Baptist, a Methodist, but he does want to know whether or not you're a Muslim. Because he knows if you're a Baptist or a Methodist, you're going to turn the other cheek. You're going to try and love your enemy. You're going to pray for them that despitefully use you. So he's not worried about you. But he knows if you're a Muslim, you're not going to turn the other cheek. If you pray for him, you pray that God kills him, or God helps you to kill him. That's the only kind of prayer you pray. It's time for you and me to unite, to get together and get this big white ape off our back. You got a bad habit. You're hooked and don't know it. You got what's known as white disease. You think you can't get along without the white man. You think you can't get some clothes without the white man. You think you can't get a house without the white man. You think you can't even get a job without the white man. You're worse than a man who thinks he can't get along without heroin. You're worse than the man who thinks he can't get along without morphine. You're worse than the junkie. You're in worse shape than the junkie because the junkie only has a little monkey on his back and you're running around with a big white ape named Uncle Sam on your back. America is faced with her worst domestic crisis since the Civil War or since the Revolutionary War. For America now faces a race war. A race war is worse than a revolutionary war. A race war is worse than a civil war.
A race war is a war in which no holds are barred. A race war is a war in which children are destroyed, in which children are mutilated, in which children face the same destructive wrath that grown-ups face. A race war is the worst war that you can conceive. And this war, race war, that is coming upon the head of the white man is something that he is bringing down upon himself. The entire country is on the verge of erupting into racial violence and bloodshed. Simply because 20 million ex-slaves are demanding freedom, justice, and equality here in America from their former slave master. 20 million so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, seeking human dignity, seeking human rights, seeking the right to live in dignity as a human being. And rather than give genuine respect and recognition to your cry for human rights, the American white man answers your nonviolence with violence. He answers your prayers and your freedom songs with false promises, deceitful maneuvers, and outright bloodshed. According to what we are taught from the white man's textbooks and his school, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War were two wars fought on American soil, supposedly for freedom and democracy. But if these two wars were really for the freedom and human dignity of all men, why are 20 million of our people still confined here in America and enslaved by second-class citizenship? Something is wrong. The truth is that the Revolutionary War was fought on American soil to free the American white man from the English white man. The Revolutionary War was never fought to provide freedom and democracy in this white country for the black man. Our people remain slaves here in America even after the Declaration of Independence was signed. In fact, most of the white founding fathers who signed the Declaration of Independence were nothing but slave owners themselves. It is sheer hypocrisy, sheer ignorance, sheer insanity for our people here in America to celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day, while white America still denies us first-class citizenship that goes with an independent people. And it is nothing but hypocrisy for the American white man to pretend that the Revolutionary War was truly a war of independence as long as 20 million black people here in America are denied the privileges of an independent people. Don't let the white man fool you. Don't let the white man smile at you and lull you to sleep. Behind that smile is a vicious heart. Behind those teeth is an animal-like beast who doesn't have it within him to want for you what he wants for himself and his own kind. Don't let that man fool you. When you look at that man, you're supposed to see him for exactly what he is. And if you want to know what he is, examine his deeds. Forget his words. He got a whole lot of pretty sounding words. Watch his deeds. His deeds are like the deeds of a snake, the deeds of a serpent, the deeds of a dragon, the deeds of a reptile, the deeds of a beast. Why, nothing but a race of beasts would take dogs and stick them on little black babies. Nothing but a race of beasts will stick dogs on black children and black women. Nothing but a race of beasts. And it is these deeds today that's causing the wrath of God to come down upon the head of the white man. And when you see him as he is and see how much hell he's catching, you're out of his mind to want to be with him. You're out of your mind to want to integrate with him. And you're really out of your mind if you take time to forgive him and ask God to have mercy on him. No, ask God to judge him. Ask God to do unto him as he has done unto you. He has caused your babies to suffer. Ask God to heap suffering upon his babies. He has caused your women to suffer. Ask God to heap suffering on his women. He has caused all of our people to suffer. You can't deny that. You may not like my saying it, but you can't deny it. while you got scars and knots on your head from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And every one of those scars is evidence against the American white man and his inhumanity to man. The Civil War was also fought on this continent, not to free the black slaves, as is commonly taught in the white man's schools, but the Civil War was actually fought to preserve the Union, preserve this country, keep it intact for white people. It wasn't fought to set you free. It wasn't fought to give you some kind of emancipation. It wasn't fought to make you a citizen. It wasn't fought to give you civil rights. It wasn't fought because they respected you and loved you as a human being. It was fought out of greed. It was fought out of selfishness. It was fought to keep this country intact for their own white selves. In essence, this only means that the American white man fought the Revolutionary War to get this country for himself.
Who has mastered the art of using half-truth? Put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Please, James Farmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charged him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. He discriminated. Don't go near the Gentiles. Go to the lost sheep. Go to the oppressed. Go to the downtrodden. Go to the exploited. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro. To have once been a criminal is no disgrace. To remain a criminal is the disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. I went to prison because I believed in men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison because I trusted men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison following the philosophy of men like Sam Yorty. But since I've been following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have been reformed, and that's more, please. That's more than Sam Yorty and Chief Parker and all these other white politicians have been able to do with the inmates in the prisons of this state. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit for reforming and rehabilitating men whom they have failed to reform and rehabilitate. Mayor Yorty referred to some press report that Mr. Muhammad had once been found guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He failed to explain purposely that in 1934, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to send his children to the white schools in Detroit, Michigan that were teaching you about little black Sambo. That's the minor that he contributed to the delinquency of. You see, this vicious, fork-tongued white man has been able to take lives and make you turn against those who want to help you and make others turn against you. This is the contributing to the delinquency of a minor that this mayor, or man who calls himself mayor, is talking about. In the same article, he said that the Muslims are the same people who rioted in the United Nations. Someone should pull his coat and let him know that at the present moment, there are $6 million worth of suits leveled against two of New York's leading newspapers for making the mistake of charging the Muslims as being involved in those United Nations riots. We were not involved. And if this fork-tongued man who calls himself your mayor had taken the time to find that out, he wouldn't be walking into the trap that he's letting his ignorance lead him into. And if he would take the time to read the Washington Post that came out the Sunday after that incident took place, the Washington Post pointed out on the front page that the Muslims had nothing to do with the UN riots. And they quoted, in saying so, the person who was at that time the commissioner of police in New York City. See, it's lies that the white man has spread about the Muslims to try and make you afraid of the Muslims, or to try and make you think that the Muslims were a criminal element, an uncouth element, and things that you would not like to be associated with. Also, they say that I'm just clearing these things up, and then we're going to get into what happened. They also say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a draft dodger. No, he wasn't. He just refused to go to the army because he was a man of peace. He was a minister of a religion of peace. He was teaching peace. So he outright refused to go to the army. That's not draft dodging. That's intelligence. Appear before the grand jury. Because the coroner's jury is stacked against Negroes. The grand jury is stacked against Negroes. The press, the radio, the television, and the newspapers are stacked against Negroes. But please, the Los Angeles Police Department is stacked against Negroes. He is stacked against all Negroes, all except those whom he has appointed to high positions. The controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb, whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim. As long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, They can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals.
For a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening. Because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he gonna want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back. To keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know, he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf, and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control him.
Other than trying to make absolutely certain that there is mass level of feminization of black men, because if they are effeminized, then the system doesn't have to worry about white genetic annihilation. A child in my office this week, a little boy, 11 years old. Mother brought him in because he was refusing to do homework. So I said, sweetheart, what's going on? He said, I have a problem. And then what the child told me, he said, I want an official father. I'm saying it now and my eye is about to water. I want an official father. Little boy sitting in the psychiatrist's office. I want an official father. He said, I know exactly what he's supposed to look like, Dr. Welsing. He's supposed to be tall, and he has a lot of muscles, and he would sit with me and help me do my homework. Do you all hear that? I was trained as a psychiatrist at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, Washington, D.C., and taught that black people did not have the intelligence to talk about their feelings. And the best treatment for them was medication. I knew it was a lie. Here's a little child. I want an official father. Years ago in the late 1960s, when I was teaching at Howard University, a parent brought another little boy in. He wasn't studying. So I said, sweetheart, don't you want to work hard in school so you can help black people? 11 years old. What did he say? No. And so, of course, I was floored. You know, the child is supposed to say, yeah. No, he said. Mind you, this is the late 60s, maybe, you know, 69, 70. He said, if you try to help black people, you're going to be killed. I said, 175 IQ. Do you all understand? These little children are perceiving and understanding exactly what the lay of the land is. Just like the little children, if you go to school, you might be killed. In the white supremacy system. Now, why is all of this happening? I say because of what I've been talking about earlier. White supremacy says must dismantle the black king. And this is why I say that the chessboard, everybody ought to have a picture of the chessboard on their icebox. Because what we're dealing with is perfectly analogous to the game of chess. What is the game of chess about? I hear a lot of B answers. I'm looking for A. The game of chess in detail is about the white king checkmating the black king. Isn't that right? Why do I say it? White always moves first. So white is playing what? Offense, defense, and black has to play defense, offense. This is why this is the most important board game in what? The white supremacy system and culture. It's a game about tactics and strategy. Tactics and strategy and tactics and strategy and tactics and strategy. Now somebody say, well, that's an intellectual game. Football is intellectual. Basketball is intellectual. That's just tactics and strategy. It's just that they have convinced us that we're supposed to be genetically inferior in terms of intelligence. Black people created chess. The first chess champion in the United States was a black man. He could pass for white in New Orleans, and so they took him, of course, on their side. So they wouldn't have to say he's black. You see, but this is the game that is about white supremacy preventing white genetic annihilation. And so they've got their whole game completely set up. The way you do it is attack the king off the field, off the board. Attack the black man. Subject him to unemployment. Does anybody know about that? If you subject the family to male unemployment, now there's a lot of people in this audience that say, I'm a single parent, female head of household, and my situation is functioning. I say it's a lot of ladies sat last night and said, I don't need no man. You see, rolling her eyes at me. It's good I knew she was a sister. My sister, my family. You understand? I don't know what you're talking about, Dr. Wellesley. I don't need. That's what the system has taught us to say. See, because we haven't understood white supremacy. And so instead of us seeing that we're at a chessboard, we don't see this top. We're just what? Warring with each other. Down here on the black side of the board. Wondering why we're not winning the tournament. Because we've been lied to, oh, it's another side of the board and something is happening over here that is affecting everything that is happening on this side of the board. I had decided before I talked to this child in my office this week that I was going to give a paper in August at the National Medical Association entitled The Pain of Black Male Children. I didn't finish the story. The little boy said, if I had a father, Dr. Wellesley, I could do my homework. Do you all understand? See, this is very critical, and what white supremacy has done, it keeps taking away from us, and then we say, well, we can make do, it's okay. We'll get our reward in heaven. I don't think God wants us to say that. Now, it may be nice up there, but it's supposed to be nice down here, too. Not just make do. And if we understand what the game is, we can do better than just make do. But we've got to understand the exact nature of the war that is being waged against us. White supremacy says, I'm going to knock the black king out with unemployment, underemployment. Lady came to my office this week. See, this is just a week of psychiatric practice. I'm a lawyer, Dr. Welsing, in a big law firm. My husband and I just are not getting along. I think I'm going to be made partner. I just don't understand why we can't communicate. I said, who's bringing home the biggest check? Do you all understand what I'm saying? She said, it doesn't make any difference to me. I said, but it makes a difference to a man. Do you see what I'm saying? She didn't structure it. She says, he keeps saying everything is my fault. I say, he's not bad. You're not bad. We just don't understand white supremacy. I used to
see on that famous corner, and the bookstore behind him had a big banner on the front of the store that said, the goddamn white man. God has damned, condemned, convicted, and sentenced the white man's world to hell. His dollar is in trouble. His dollar is not respected on the foreign market the way it used to be. Huh? The financial capitals and centers of the world, for the most part, were stationed in America, Wall Street and others. Now of the 10, over 5, maybe 6, 7 or more, are now in Japan. America has fallen behind in technology, falling behind in science, falling behind in mathematics. Where she used to be the number one lender nation of the world, she is now the number one debtor nation of the world. She has a serious balance of payment deficit that runs into the trillion-dollar figure. And all her great, minds of economics and finance can't balance the books. For America. America is coming down. America is falling. So the scripture says Babylon the Great is falling, is falling. She has become the habitation of devils. Huh? The hole of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. This is that mystery Babylon that the book of Revelations is talking about that is now falling. It is the habitation of devils. And God has condemned America, and the destruction of America is because of you. He's sending rain, irregular rain, snow, hail, and earthquake today. Twisters and tornadoes today. Because of America's wicked mistreatment of God's chosen people that are here in the midst of this no good beast. So when God damns America, condemns America, you shouldn't get in the way. But some of you get angry. I can't go along with that. God has not condemned white people. That's so silly. You're the one that's silly. You should want God to step in and intervene for you. All the hell you've been catching from this crap. Over 400 years of slavery, suffering, and death. A strange fruit that hangs from the trees with blood at the root. Who was that, Bessie Smith or Billie Holiday? Used to sing it. Strange fruit in the south with on the trees with blood at the root. That strange fruit was the black man and the black woman hanging from the tree. Drowned us in the lakes, the rivers.
We can't do all of it. So we have to begin to look at those behaviors and those kinds of things that produce this. So when I say that it moves from the individual, family, community, it's reinforced over and over again. We all never got in a room and talked about it, but we have the same wounds. When I was on Gil Noble's show, what I found out was we have the same stories. If I had an open mic today and put it right there in front, every one of you could get up and tell a story that we could all relate to, couldn't you? But let me tell you something. When white people hear us, they go, you know, that, I think you're exaggerating. That was just, that person just probably had a bad day that day. It had nothing to do with your race. But what if they heard an audience full of people 2004 say, yes, it did. And if you don't believe his story, let me tell you my story and her story and his story. We ain't making it up. This is not a figment of our imagination. It's alive and well and killing us today. That's real. So what does it look like transmitted from one group to the next? And this is an interesting dynamic because we do it. It starts on the level of the individual. Because I tell you about mama and daddy are broken during slavery. And let me tell you how that breaking process happened. Y'all know how Willie Lynch explained it. But I want to talk specifically what you do to dehumanize, to denigrate a people to the point where they learn to be helpless. Because you learn helplessness. And the way learned helplessness occurs is tests were done with animals, animal subjects, conditioned response. Skinner, Pavlov, these were people who started to look at conditioned response. And you know much of what has been said about how people were enslaved. Because Malcolm said if you take the chains off their ankles and you put it where? Put it on their mind. You don't ever have to worry about them. Right? And I often give this analogy. This was amazing. My husband and I were up one night. We like to watch the Animal Planet. And we watch all those animals. I know everything about snakes, everything. It's interesting. And this one time, I was in the other room, and I was hearing, and there was one series where they said when good animals go bad or something. And, you know, the little nice foo-foo starts attacking the family and stuff. And they had this one episode of an elephant. It was an African bull elephant in a circus. That got done. He said, you're getting off my back and all y'all getting up out of here. Okay. Elephant went wild, right? Running through, stomping people. You know, I'm done. And then they brought in a zoologist to explain the elephant's behavior. I swear to you, this is what he said. Well, you have to consider taken from its homeland, chained on a long journey, beaten, treated illly, separated, fed poorly, sick, and then under someone's whip constantly, it's expected that he would do what he did. And I came back out, I'm going, you can see it in an elephant. So it gets reinforced, and part of what happens if you tie an elephant, you know, if you knock a large animal down, they get blown out because nothing can knock them down, right? But if you can stop and chain an elephant, if you can stop it from moving against its will, and you're not an elephant, that elephant learns helplessness. They will chain, and now to this day, you can actually walk into different, where there are circuses, and they'll have zookeepers, and they'll have all these different people that'll be working with different areas of the animals, little circus folks. And you'll see the elephants standing next to the chains. Chain's not on the elephant. But it's so used to being chained, it won't move. Matter of fact, you can tie a thread around it, and it won't move. Because it doesn't believe it can move. So learned helplessness is a process of after a while, you hear it over and over again that you are dysfunctional, that you are backwards, that you are underachieving, and you're not making benchmarks. You are all of those things over again. You begin to believe it's true. That's what, in Wrightsville, Iowa, what Jane Elliott proved by Brown Eyes, Blue Eyes in the course of 2 weeks. Changed the scores permanently. The score was changed permanently academically for those children who believed they were on top and those that believed they were on the bottom. So what we have to understand is, I think probably, you know, the last 400 years has been one hell of a conditioning for us. And that self-hatred, I heard a brother say to me yesterday, we have to love ourselves enough so that we can outlove how much we hate ourselves. And so we have to get to a point where we understand how we came to do it. So how does it look? Let me give you this example because you all know about it. If you're in a bank, you're about my age. No, you got to be younger than me because I'm not going to be standing in line that long. But let's say you are in your 30s and you're looking at a woman or a man in their 30s and they have small children and their children are where in proximity to them in the bank? It's small children, 3, 4, 5-year-olds. They're actually really very close to you. Very close, so close, in fact, they are touching you sometimes, holding on to your leg. And as you move, they move, all in lockstep together, the whole crew. It's a very unusual sight, but we see it every day. And if the child, and again, I teach human development, and it's normal for children to move about and stray. That's how they learn. There's a certain thing called secure attachment and insecure attachment. And a child that has secure attachment will wander about and talk to people and feel safe. But if our children move, get over here. You know, you'll see it, that little thing. Child, just a little bit to the right. Child can't move. Well, I started to do the research, so I would ask, you know, the mother why that child don't need to be running around the bank. Okay. Meanwhile, same bank, white mother, 3, 4, 5-year-olds. Honey, come. Oh, no, don't leave that man. I'm going to put that down. Child is swinging on the little ropes and sliding down the aisles and running up and down and talking to you, annoying everybody in the bank. And the mother's just gently going, oh, no, run. You know, same bank. Other child, get your. Right? Now, there's something going on in that dynamic. One of the dynamics is that this mother is behaving this way, and everyone, you know, is watching. The little white kids are looking at the little black kids. There's two things going on. It's going both ways. The black kid is learning, oh, he can run, and she can run and play, but I'll get in trouble. And the white kid learns, they must not be able to run and play. I wonder why they got to stay over there. What's wrong with them? Their message is being sent, right? So now children are going to stay and be obedient to their parents. So when the mother, of course, or father gets to the bank teller, kids are lower than the counter. I've watched this. I'm not making this up. So the children will still try to explore because it is part of their task of human development to do so. So the child is going to try to escape. It's normal. Child's trying to escape. Mama can't see me. I'm sliding down the aisle. Underneath the little counter, mama doesn't notice. I'm almost free. Some other black people in the line step out the line. Right? They don't know the mother or the father or the children. They give the death stare. Right? Little kid goes, oh, wow. Get back in line. No, nothing's exchanged. Now we're looking at not just the individual and the family. What is the other level of transmission? Now it's being reinforced on a community level. No words are exchanged. You see, because we've all taught each other that got to have your back. And I appreciate that. But what we're doing is we are crippling our children. In so doing, not a word is transmitted. And that's why it can't happen when people say, well, Kenya, because they'd love for post-traumatic slave syndrome to end up in a book somewhere where they can bill it. Right? They'd love for you to find a pill to fix it. But post-traumatic slave syndrome cannot be solved in that way because it also implies a need for justice. And that means that it's got to heal on all those levels. We have to not only take ownership of ourselves, but ownership of our communities, right? We have to learn that self-sufficiency. So it is something communicated on a variety of levels, and so as a result of that, we have to deal with it on a variety of levels. We've got to heal the individual, the family, and the community. So I'm going to cover one more thing. I want to talk specifically about the transmission psychologically. What happens to us and what human beings do when they are subject to dehumanization. I often say to people that when someone black has to go to someone white for help, what it does to them. Now, it's interesting because, you know, we're free, right? But something happens when you're in a position where you know that the person on the other side that you're depending on to help you is a white person, isn't it? I don't care how liberal and open and spiritual you think you are. Something else occurs in that room 2004. If you're trying to get the loan, if you're trying to get the food stamps, whatever it is you're trying to get, the whole dynamic changes when that white person's on the other side, does it not? Right? Because even if there are no words, there's something psychically communicated in that room. And I try to explain to people what happens to a person that has to now go to someone that they distrust and have been taught to distrust for their survival in 2004. Because why should it resonate any particular way? I want to talk specifically about the connection between that dehumanization of men and women during slavery and what it did to our relationships with one another. Black men and black women. It's such an important subject that if we don't begin this discussion, we are going to look at the total destruction of our families. We've got to have this discussion. And what we need to know is that we both, black men and black women, fight a war when we go out there. We're both in it and we're both injured by it. But what we have to resist is a temptation to punish each other for it, because that's what happens. That's what we do. I often talk about the story of my son and the little boy that looked at him and said, "What you're looking at? What you're staring at?" I talk about that story of this little boy that has so much antipathy for himself that when my son looks at him, it feels threatening to him to such a degree he wants to beat him up. And how in Africa everyone says, "I see you," as a greeting. I talk about that because I saw the disparity and I saw the injury in young boys. Yesterday I heard a young man talk about that. He was about 14, 15 years old and talked about how he saw a young man in the street in Harlem and how just looking at this young man, he wanted to beat him up. He wanted to jump on him. And I didn't have enough time in the day to explain to him all that was going on in that young man, but I do understand what was going on in that young man. I understand why it is respect is so important for black people, because we've never been respected. I want you to know why we created words like Madea, Big Mama, Big Daddy, because they didn't call us Mr. and Sir. We created our own names to cling to a sense of nobility. Are you following me? Because we had no value, you see. So we created those terms and those terminologies. And even now some people go, they're ashamed and they get nervous when they hear someone say, "My dear," a big mama. Because I needed you to know that you were great. Because we weren't given titles. Those were only for white people, you see. So one of the things that we have to understand is what that dehumanization produced. So on a very fundamental level, we have to understand that women were subjugated on one level, men were subjugated on another. Women were subjugated to never trust their men, to only rely on the master. Now you understand, we never forgot. We knew how to protect each other. How many of you saw Sankofa, the movie? You should see that. It's very good. And the discussion is important because in this movie, there is a situation that happens where there's two young slaves. The woman is about 8 months pregnant. And they don't want their baby born in slavery, so they're going to run away. Well, they're caught by the overseers. And so to make a lesson of them, they call all the slaves together, and they beat her. But they don't let just anybody beat her. They ask the black overseer to beat her. And he beats her to death. This is someone that was like his sister that he beats to death. And then the camera shot fades, and you see that the woman the medicine woman goes in and she delivers that baby because the baby's almost term. And so she takes that baby, and the next scene, she's rocking the baby. And the man who beat the girl to death, now, you know, they all got to go back to living with each other. Are you following me? We all got to go back to the field side by side after you just beat this woman to death who was my wife and my sister. And we have to reconcile that. So he comes in, the man who beat the woman to death, and he goes, the baby all right? That baby all right? And the woman says, the baby going to be all right, but you can't come around for a while, okay? You can't come around. And I imagine what happens to him, right? Because they understand that he did what he had to do because the gun was trained on him. But you still can't come around for a while. Because we got to heal from what you did. How do you do such a thing? Emasculate him to the point where he beat someone to death that he loved. And then they have to look in the eyes of her parents, the people who loved her. And then to have to accept the love from them to you after having done such an act. What does it do to the human spirit? So what I started to look at is the psychology of the beatings and the rapes, because they were done very methodically. So when you take a woman out of a man's bed, that is his wife. You take him out of her bed, his bed, you take her out, and you rape her. Not only do you rape her, you give her, pass her around to some of your friends and their children. And then you say to him before you leave, and she better be good, or I'll beat you. I don't know that you can destroy a man any further than that. So she goes away and she comes back and she has two things she's got to do. She's got to take care of her and she's got to take care of him. And somewhere in his mind he might wonder, did she enjoy that? Somewhere in his mind he might think, couldn't you have fought him off? And deep down inside he knows she couldn't. And then she looks over at him and thinks, why couldn't you protect me? Why couldn't you stop this from happening to me? And then in the second thought, she says, I don't want you to feel pain and guilt and disgust of me. And I don't want you to feel shame. So she soils herself again. And so what we have to understand is the psychology of that, because when they get up the next morning and they look at each other, they're not the same people anymore. And still they have to exist that way, perpetually, not to mention their children are watching. So when I started to look at the psychology of that, the rape wasn't simply for the rape. It was to make certain that she was submissive and that she knew fully he could do nothing to protect her. Hence, he was always called a boy. That's why my father couldn't handle the term boy. You know, we hear people say, well, me and my boys. My father would turn over in his grave if somebody called him a boy, because he grew up in the South and he knew what that meant. It meant that you were continually confined to adolescence as a grown man. And so when you begin to look at the interaction, now you have 2004. You have a black man that walks into a social service office trying to get some mental health assistance. He happens to be bipolar. That means manic depressive. And he hasn't gotten his meds because he lost his job and he lost his medical coverage, and so he has no medication. So he's a little agitated, okay? He's a little upset, a little paranoid, but he's walked in here with Susie, who came from the suburbs, that got her degree fresh, who's been taught her whole life to be what? Afraid of him. Because what does he want to do to her? He wants to rape her. Now, if you all think I'm exaggerating, there's a book here called 100 Years of Lynching. If you look at the majority of the reasons why folks were lynched after the advent of slavery, it was because of a white woman. He scared her, he upset her, he startled her, he looked at her menacingly, he tripped over her. All of that could cost a black man his life. And so when we look at what has happened to our men, what must we remind each other of? And what happens to that black man that's on, you know, he didn't have his medication, he's a little agitated. He's about 6'9". He can't even fit in the chair, but he's trying to look smaller because he doesn't want to what? He doesn't want to upset or frighten her. But she is frightened, isn't she? She is frightened. So he's trying to figure out what he can do. Maybe I better not look at her directly. So I'm going to hold my head down. So in other words, I'm sick and I'm in pain, but I need to take care of you before you can take care of me. And that's what black people do 2004 with white people, and white people don't understand what's going on. It's a fact. It's a fact. So after you see the emasculation of the black man, the deterioration and the soiling of the black woman, how does that move through history? Well, I told you that they gave you those images over and over again. Because after the illusion of slavery and after the black codes and convict lease, then they said something else. They said, you know what? Separate but equal. Jim Crow, segregation. Y'all going to be treated just as nice as everybody else. All going to be equal. We just want you to be separate. And we said, hallelujah, that's a great thing. And you know, we did pretty well. And we did pretty well because we had to be what? Together. We were interdependent. We couldn't go nowhere else. So now we were dependent on each other. Guess what? We built beautiful towns. We had banks. We had everything we needed. We patronized one another's stores. We went to the same barbershop. We were the teachers, the doctors. We were everything. And then they looked over there and they said, you know, they're prospering. We thought the trauma was over. But was the trauma over? Oh, no. They burnt those towns to the ground. And very often, what was the reason why it all started? Because of a white woman. Because somebody thought somebody did something to a white. It didn't matter. It was a trumped-up charge, and it's in the minds of everyone. Because, again, the preoccupation was always with sexuality. It's been there forever. From the moment black men came off the boat, white men were preoccupied with their penises. That's an absolute truth. Absolute truth. And the reason for that had to do with a lot of things, but if you consider their lynchings, what was the first thing to get cut off? Always. And that was sold and put on a mantelpiece. Right? So what we have to understand about this is that these are things that became part of our psyches. Black men, black women, white women. Because we became a reminder of our what? Our weakness. When black men look at black women, it's a reminder of failure. So show me something else. And what happened was during segregation when we were booming and we were doing well, we could have healed. But we didn't get a chance to heal because they said, we need your money. We don't want you to give to each other. There's so many of you. We could benefit from you. And we would tell you, you know what? We know you have an ice maker. But white men's ice is colder. And we believed it. And we stopped patronizing each other's stores because we bought the notion that if it was white, it was better. And we watched our communities crumble. So when did the trauma stop? So then now we have integration, what we never fully integrated. Look around you. We didn't integrate. And so now when we look at that, we go, well, how can we reinforce, though, 2004, the images? You all remember the 70s and the 60s and the platform shoes and the... You all remember Superfly, don't you? You know, coffee. You remember that. Sweet, sweet back. Black exploitation. Now, we're going to sell you the image to you. And we bought that too, including all the fashions which they produced that said and reinforced that this is who you are. So they gained wealth as a result of our pathology about who we were. And they showed it to you over and over and over again. Because for white people, they can't feel the guilt. And the number one that comes out is, I don't want to feel the guilt, but you know what? Don't take my privilege. And so what we have to understand is we've got to take this chain from around us. We have to do it. Post-traumatic slave syndrome is alive and well. And if we don't get with it and understand what it looks like between us, so now we have a man and a woman and we're integrated. Now we are up there trying to feel good. I look at, in my book, I talk about something called Never Let Them See You Sweat. And you begin to realize that what black people do to black people. You have somebody, I believe this on a spiritual level, by the way, the first example, the first sign of spiritual evolution and development is to delight in the success of your neighbor. Somebody black, now this is on a community level, they say, yeah, you know, they just bought a house over there. You know, that's an expensive area. They bought that house. They ain't gonna keep that house. The only reason why he got the house was because of his, you know what I'm saying? And I started to look at it. The young folks call it hating, right? But I'm telling you the truth. It's so pervasive that it's scary. And I want you to look at it from another level, not out there. I want you to look at it up close and personal. What goes on inside of you? And I want you to get with this on an honest level. You don't have to say it to anybody, but I want you to figure out what resonates inside your body when you hear the success of someone else. I started to pay attention to that. It's not jealousy. It's fear. And it's a fear of being abandoned. And it's what happens every single time. Matter of fact, they'll dog you out. And the moment you fall, they're going to pick you up and love you. Because I just didn't want you to leave me. That's really what it was. I want to love you right here. But when you leave me, when you advance, grow, develop, all that stuff, you're going to abandon me. And when you start looking at the superficial ties that had to happen, think about the fact that you have someone you love on a slave plantation. How attached are you going to be to them? Are you going to have to equip yourself emotionally if one day they're gone from you? How much of your heart are you going to let break? It makes sense that I can't love you too much because I have to be okay if you're gone. It's a duality of reality that no human being should have to deal with. But we're still dealing with it. Or those of us that don't want to be black. We know. They're the ones that are Indian. All a sign of the self-hatred, the pathology. That's danger in slavery, isn't it? Isn't that right up? You know them, don't you? Oh, did I mention, yeah, I have a lot of Indian in me. I have people from, you know. So there's that sense. And what we have to understand about that is that pathology moves along. So what do we get reminded of? Now, 2004, you got two people. They went to school. They did the right stuff. They got the little degrees. They, you know, put the little down payment on the house. And all of a sudden, they're living paycheck to paycheck, like everybody else in America is. And they're looking at each other and saying, why can't you be this thing? Well, you know, because white people told us that, you know, now that we're all free, and now that we're all, you know, everything's equal, you should have the two cars in the garage and the whole little spread. White people don't have that. But we bought it, and guess who we punished when we couldn't have it? We punished each other. Because she looks at him and says, once again, why can't you protect me? Why can't you make my world safe for me? You're the man. And so he looks for someone that doesn't question that. And so we have to begin to understand that pathology of what we remind each other of, just like that little boy that saw my son and said, what you looking at? It's the same thing. We do it on an adult level. What you looking at, same thing. You think you all that. All of those things are symptoms of a feeling or a degree of dislike for oneself that is more destructive than a war. And it continues. The good hair, the bad hair, all of the things, it's all in the videos, the same stuff. It's over and over and over again. People want their children to pick someone else. They want out of the race. I don't want to look at this black face anymore. Because surely that is the biggest problem there is. Meanwhile, everybody in the world is running, trying to find tan. They're locking their hair. They're trying to manufacture booties. Getting collagen in the lips. Trying to figure out every kind of safe tan there could be. And until they say you're okay and you're beautiful, we don't believe we are. For some reason, J-Lo just gave us permission to have booty. Now it's okay to have one. And I mean that seriously. Those are the things that we have to look at that become part of our pathology, and our children are watching us. Okay? So one of the things that I try to do with the work is not to look at it from a purely philosophical level, but to say, what does it look like up close and personal with a black man and a black woman? I'm married to a black man. I love that black man. And I understand where he is fragile. And I understand what it means to be strong enough to say, I need you. Or I am afraid. And one of the things that we have to understand about what manhood is, because it took me a long time to understand how fragile we all are. Black women fight with their mouths. They fight verbally. No, that's the truth. That's the truth. We can back somebody up off us in a hot second. And it's something that we had to equip ourselves with in order to survive. We would back the white women off. We would back the white men off. We'd back everybody off when we needed to. We knew how to do that. We could take them apart. And if it had to go to the next level, we could do that too. Right? So one of the things that happened, though, with that defense that we developed, that tongue, because I want you to think about this. And I talk often about those words that we say. You know? I know people in families that were treated, Oprah talked about not being treated well because of the color of her skin, knowing which child was favored over the other because they were fairer.